ideally, we want to be going outside within an hour of waking, and we want to make sure that we leave our sunglasses at home. And here's why. When the light hits our retina, it sends a signal to our suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is our circadian pacemaker. And from there, this wonderful cascade of neurotransmitters and hormones happens. So any residual melatonin from the night before gets shut down. Our cortisol increases for energy. Our serotonin increases for a mood boost. And it also prepares our melatonin for the upcoming night.
Welcome to A Certain Age, a show for women who are unafraid to age out loud. Beauties, we are recording this show during Sleep Awareness Month, a month that focuses on the connection between sleep, health, mood, and your overall well-being. But if you are one of the zillions of women who are up all night tossing and turning, you are already fully aware of the importance of a sound night's sleep. Want to get to sleep faster, better, naturally? Ready to sleep better tonight? Stick around because we are getting schooled on all things sleep with Morgan Adams, a double certified holistic sleep coach, creator of the Midlife Sleep School, and a woman who suffered from sleep challenges for years before she learned tools and strategies for unlocking a more restful night that she is now sharing with the world. If you have trouble falling asleep because your busy brain keeps humming, if you wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep, if you are tired and groggy when your alarm rings, today's show is for you. Welcome, Morgan.
Thank you, Katie. Great to be here.
Well, I am very, very excited because sleep is the holy grail, right? It keeps the trains on the tracks. It improves mood, energy, all the good stuff. So I'm really thrilled to dive in. I would love to start by having you share how you got into sleep coaching.
Yes. So as you mentioned in the intro, I had insomnia for a long time. I had it for about 8 years, and I was dependent on Ambien during that time. The episode of insomnia started because of a personal relationship issue, which I won't get into, but essentially I was one of those people who had a really hard time falling asleep. It would take me sometimes up to 2 hours. That is why I decided to go with the sleeping pill. But I was actually able to get off the sleeping pills eventually due to the gentle nudging of my then boyfriend, now husband, and was able to sleep pretty well for many years. And then there was a bit of a plot twist, and that was the beginning of the pandemic. March of 2020, I started having trouble sleeping again. And I got really concerned because I did not want to go down that road of insomnia that I'd been down before. So I started Googling sleep and started implementing some of the strategies I learned and was quickly able to turn my sleep around. And I was so fascinated by what I was learning and how the changes were happening that I started just organically sharing it on Facebook and letting people know what I was doing. And people were like, wow, I'm having trouble sleeping too. So I started to think more and more about how I wanted to make an impact in the world. In 2018, I did have a breast cancer diagnosis, and that really set me on this incredible health journey. And I knew at that point I wanted to do something with my life to help women with their health. I just wasn't sure how that would play out. And when I discovered this whole sleep world, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Morgan, you have to help women with their sleep. And that's really how things took off in 2020. I was actually one of those women who kind of like during the pandemic really just kind of got very clear on what my mission was going to be. And then I was off to the races doing the certifications and trainings and all that stuff.
I love how this was a story that you, like a pandemic pivot, and how you recognize this pain point for so many women because you were living it yourself. I've had other guests on the show who've talked about problems with Ambien. Is that what brings your clients to you? Are they people who are relying on artificial aids to fall asleep and want to change? What type of client walks in your door?
Yeah, a lot of the women who come to me are either thinking about trying a sleep medication, or they may already be on one. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a prescription. A lot of women come to me on Benadryl, you know, on antihistamines. But generally speaking, the women that come to me really want a more holistic approach to getting better sleep. And they typically do have insomnia. So quite a few, but not all, are already on some kind of medication.
Interesting. And do you lump CBD in with that, or is that something that sort of falls outside the box of a sleeping pill?
Yeah, I really consider CBD more of like a supplement. And so it's kind of in a different category than a sleeping pill, like that a medication, prescribed medication.
Okay, interesting. So we're going to dive into so much. I'm really excited about this. I've done two shows on sleep before. They are downloaded like crazy because women need these tools. So I know we're going to dive into some specifics. Let's do a big stage setting question. You know, how much sleep do we really need? If we're not clocking 8 hours of Z's and we're feeling stressed out about that, you know, is this sort of a case-by-case basis, or is there a generally accepted baseline that we should be trying to hit?
Yeah. So this whole 8 hour thing has really been beaten into our heads quite a lot by the media. But when you look at the National Sleep Foundation recommendations for adults 18 to 64, you'll see that they recommend between 7 to 9 hours. That's sort of the general guideline. But when you actually get down into their fine print with their recommendations, you'll see that they say between 6 and 10 hours is recommended for some people. So that's quite a bit of latitude. And really the way I like to approach sleep duration is really more like we all don't have the same calorie requirement or the same shoe size. So for example, you know, you may require fewer calories than someone else who is a professional athlete. So it really comes down to kind of figuring out like how much sleep you need to feel good and not like getting too bogged down with the 8 hours. When I have clients come to me who have insomnia, what I'm typically seeing is their fear, and they're very concerned about this 8 hour thing they keep hearing about. And when they hear from me that like, hey, you might not need 8 hours, we're going to work together to really figure out how much sleep you need. It sort of takes this burden off their shoulders, because they often find that like they are like super like dialed in with 7 hours, and it's just a huge relief to them. So basically, everyone really just needs to kind of figure out for themselves really what their sweet spot is with the sleep need.
Yeah, it's so important to do this myth busting, because we can hold ourselves to these measuring sticks and then judge ourselves harshly when we fall short. But let's talk about this notion of feeling dialed in, because that sounds amazing, right? Everybody wants to hit the pillow, fall asleep, wake up feeling refreshed and ready for the day. And there are things that get in the way of that. I know menopause is one of them. Things like distractions and Instagram scrolling is another thing that sometimes gets in the way of my sleep. Before we dive into your strategies for optimizing sleep, talk to us about screens. You know, do we really need to be avoiding these full stop at night?
Yeah. So the screen issue is quite a debated one in the sleep community. And we often hear, you know, get off your screen 1 to 2 hours before bed. And I think that that honestly is a little bit of an unrealistic expectation for a lot of people, because there are a lot of things we do on our screens. So the blue light thing, well, I'll just kind of share with you some thoughts on that. That's a very hotly debated topic in sleep too. So we do know that blue light can suppress our melatonin production. That's kind of a given. But the degree to which that happens is sort of variable. So people with very light eyes are more sensitive to that blue light. There's also the thickness of our eyelids, which can have an impact. So there is some personal variability as to how sensitive we can be to blue light. So they actually did a study recently where they showed, they had people looking at regular screens with blue light kind of blasting at them. And then they did another study where they had people looking at screens that had the Flux app, or basically what that would equate to would be like the Apple night mode setting, where it's a little bit dimmer, a little bit warmer. And what they found was that there was only a 4-minute difference in sleep latency with the people who had the alteration of their screen to a warmer hue. So what that indicates is that maybe the blue light is not quite as detrimental as we thought. But again, it is sort of a variable factor with other, you know, with the light eyes and the thickness of our eyelids. So I think it is probably a wise idea before you go to bed to have a little bit of time where you're not in front of a screen as just sort of a safety.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I'm fascinated by this whole blue eye, thin eyelid thing, because I feel like I feel like I've got both, quite honestly. And I am addicted to my eye mask, which I'm hoping solves some of these problems. So Morgan, I want to talk to you about I know we talked a little bit about these sort of three strategies that we're going to share with our listeners for optimizing sleep. We're heading into a break, but I want everyone to hang in there, because when we come back, we're going to get into three easy ideas you can be using this evening to get a better night's sleep. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Beauties, we all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep stress bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Sure, we can share our stress with our girlfriends or our spouses, but sometimes we need to give friends and family a break. Sometimes therapy is the better option. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. I used therapy when I was a new mom, struggling with the exhaustion and overwhelm of new motherhood. Therapy was a chance to get my worries off my chest and to learn new coping tools. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/acertainage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/acertainage.
I am Patty Callahan Henry.
I am Mary Kay Andrews.
I'm Kristen Harbell.
And I'm Christy Whitson Harvey.
Friends in Fiction is led by four longtime friends, the four of us, with more than 75 published books between us.
Through in-depth conversations and interviews, we discuss the books we've written, the books we're reading, and the art of storytelling.
We're here with endless stories to support indie bookstores, authors, librarians, and readers just like you.
We are always seeking innovative ways to introduce dynamic voices and trends in publishing.
On this channel, you will find hundreds of episodes with some of your favorite authors, including the four of us with our new releases, as we reveal the stories behind the stories, offer writing tips, and talk about the creation of novels, memoirs, and nonfiction titles.
So, if you love books and you're curious about the writing world, you are in the right place.
You can listen to Friends and Fiction on any major streaming platform.
Okay, Morgan, we're back from the break. When into it, we told our listeners that we were going to share three easy, impactful ideas for improving sleep. What are they?
So what I love about all of these is they are big needle movers with my clients, and they're also free. So the first one I'll share is getting morning sunlight. So ideally, we want to be going outside within an hour of waking, and we want to make sure that we leave our sunglasses at home. And here's why. When the light hits our retina, it sends a signal to our suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is our circadian pacemaker. And from there, this wonderful cascade of neurotransmitters and hormones happens. So any residual melatonin from the night before gets shut down. Our cortisol increases for energy. Our serotonin increases for a mood boost. And it also prepares our melatonin for the upcoming night. So you really only need to be outside for about 10, 15 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, on an overcast day. So that is just a very simple way. And it also just gives us like this, a little bit of an ability to get movement in the day if we're taking a walk as well. But if you can't walk, you can just sit on your porch and you're still good.
Or garden, yeah. or do this whole host of things you could do outside for 15 sunny minutes. I love this idea.
Yeah. And so the second thing is to have a consistent wake time. And that means all days, even weekends, because our bodies don't know the difference between the weekend and the weekday. So the reason why this is important, again, it's a very powerful way to entrain our circadian rhythm. And what we find is that when we have a very anchored wake time every morning, we naturally become sleepy around the same time every night. So once you've woken up, there's sort of this countdown process that happens. So about 16, 17 hours later is when we have this buildup of adenosine, which is our sleepy chemical, kind of signaling, hey, it's time to sleep. So that morning wake up time is an awesome anchor to kind of ensure that we're also getting to bed around the same time every night. So again, you're just really ensuring your regularity and your consistency. So the last tip I have is exercise. And we all know exercise is so incredibly important on many different levels. But we also know that there have been so many studies showing that regular exercise can improve sleep. So they did a meta-analysis of 13 studies showing that exercise was associated with deep sleep. And they did another study showing that for older adults, moderate exercise increased deep sleep by 40%. That is a lot of deep sleep increase.
That's astonishing.
And, what I love about this, Katie, is that they're saying moderate exercise. You don't need to do HIIT workouts or like really intense things to get this benefit. And exercise encompasses so many different activities. Like we can all find something that we like doing. And as a bonus, if you're doing walking outside, you're having that benefit of that natural light. So you're kind of getting a little bit of a feed two birds with one scone type of situation.
I love that. First of all, anytime I get an easy button idea, I'm like, I'm in.
Yes.
And I love the idea of starting with a morning walk and getting sun. I have a dog, which gets me out, and I love walking. I actually had a wonderful podcast guest on several years ago, Joy Shulman, who has her own show called The Weekly Walk. And she talks about the importance of walking for brain health and for fitness and longevity. And so you're giving us another reminder about why getting out early in the morning and walking is such a great idea. I also love that you identify that these three sleep boosting steps are free.
Yes.
Right? Because free is good.
Yes.
Not everything needs to be expensive or time consuming, you know, because you offer your service, your coaching services to women who are really struggling, but these are three easy ideas. So for people who are truly struggling, who do want to work with a sleep coach, I know you have something called Sleep School, which is intriguing. Can you give us a little overview of how that works and who does that best serve? You know, is it somebody
Yes.
truly struggling on their own that's not moving the needle with these three easy ideas?
Yeah. So Midlife Sleep School is my new course that I recently launched. And I really designed it for women in midlife who are struggling with insomnia. Women who have already kind of been down that route of, you know, trying the supplements, trying the hacks and those kind of gimmicks that they read about online, but they're really ready to really make an impact with their sleep. And so what I have done is I've based this course on some of the most potent principles of cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And that's a whole other topic in itself, but essentially what that's about is changing behaviors and attitudes about sleep to improve sleep. And so it is a self-paced course so that women can do this on their own time and pace themselves accordingly to, you know, what their schedule allows. So I'm real excited for this, to have a chance for women to have some of the strategies that I use without having to do the one-to-one coaching, because I know that's not accessible for everybody.
Yeah, and it's great to have this deeper dive that you can do at a self-paced cadence, which is smart. So I'm curious, for people who are listening who are thinking, I'm going to start using some of Morgan's recommendations, or I've really been struggling, but I think that I need to focus on this. How long does it take to fix sleep problems? Is this something that we can expect? You know, these are easy ideas for, you know, that people can use, but when might they see results?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's not really one answer to that, because it really depends on how quickly people are implementing the strategies, and also how long they've had insomnia. So I've had clients like get results within like a couple weeks, but I've also had clients it takes a few months to really get them moving in the right direction. So again, it really depends on that person's situation, how long they've been struggling, and really their motivation level.
Gotcha. And so when should a client be working with a doctor? Because I know that there are medical conditions like sleep apnea, there are other conditions that cause sleep disruptions. We have hormonal changes and menopause that affect how we sleep. when do you advise a client to talk to a different kind of medical provider?
When I'm actually doing my initial call with a potential client, I do a nice assessment to see if they are at risk or potentially have another sleep disorder. And if I'm very certain they have one that requires a medical attention, I will refer them on and not work with them. But if we are working together, and this has happened a few times, and the interventions are taking longer than they should, and I suspect that there might be another issue, and this has happened quite a bit with sleep apnea. In fact, postmenopausal women have about a 47 to 67% risk for sleep apnea, and that's huge. And quite often they're not doing the typical, you know, snoring and typical behaviors that people who have sleep apnea do. So what I end up doing is referring them to get a sleep test. And what we often find is that they do have some form of sleep apnea, so they need treatment for that. And then there are other times when they might need to deal with their hormones, and they go to a provider to talk to the provider about hormonal replacement therapy.
Got it. That makes so much sense. I've actually heard that about sleep apnea and menopausal women, which was just another one of the surprises of menopause, that you have a greater incidence of sleep apnea than you do before you head into menopause, which was fascinating and I'm sure is causing a lot of people sleep troubles. So a question for you. I know that there are sort of two kinds of sleep issues. I sometimes get into bed and my chattering brain will not let me fall asleep. So that happens to me, you know, more nights than I'd like. And then there are times when I completely fall asleep easily and readily, but I'm up in the middle of the night at 3 or 4 a.m. and then I cannot get back to this sleep. So let's, you know, I'm sure my listeners had the same exact issues. Let's start with having trouble falling asleep. What are some recommendations you can make for listeners who hit the pillow and their mind immediately races?
This happens to so many people. And so one of the things that I suggest that people do is actually a strategy that can be utilized during the day. And I call them mindfulness snacks. So essentially what this is, it's like a small little 10-minute break where you're doing something that is not a productive activity. So you're not working, you're actually just taking a walk, you're sitting in silence, maybe you're doing breath work or meditating. And what that allows us to do, it allows us to process our thoughts and emotions during the day, because so often we as women get so busy, we're just boom, boom, boom from one thing to the next. And we don't have any time to process those important feelings and thoughts during the day. And so what happens at night when our head hits the pillow, all of those things bubble up. And that's why we really have a hard time getting to sleep. So that is one strategy I would recommend, is just taking those mindfulness snacks throughout the day. Another thing I would recommend is really leaning into an evening routine, perhaps, you know, an hour, half an hour before bed, or really as much time as you have to commit to that, and really decompressing, doing some kind of wind down activity. And whatever that activity is completely personal to you. I mean, there's like a plethora of things you could do, but essentially what you want to do is not be, quote, productive, not be working up until the moment you're supposed to go to bed.
Makes so much sense. So now let's flip the coin here to the other side of the equation for our listeners, for people who are struggling to stay asleep, whose minds pop them awake at 3 or 4 in the morning. What is a recommendation for them?
Yeah. So actually, somewhat of the same recommendation as before for trouble falling asleep, it would be to, you know, allow yourself time to process those thoughts and emotions during the day, doing mindfulness snacks. A more advanced technique, if you're like really into the worry mode, and a lot of times what happens when we wake up in the middle of the night, our thoughts become more catastrophic. And it's because it's true. And it sounds kind of crazy, but our brains are actually not operating from the rational part. And we're operating from our amygdala, our emotional center. And so things get catastrophic. So what we can often do, and this works with a lot of my clients very well, is take some time, maybe after dinner, before dinner, and do something called the constructive worry exercise. So what you do is you take a piece of paper, you draw a line down the center, you make two columns. On the left, you write your concerns and worries, and on the right, you write solutions. And you're basically just listing out all of your worries and concerns, and on the opposite column, you're writing down the next step to solving that problem. So it's essentially a brain dump. It's getting all of this stuff that's in your head out onto paper so that when you wake up in the middle of the night, you're not as apt to be perseverating on it when you should be sleeping.
It's such a smart strategy. I love that. I'm definitely trying that.
Good, good. And then for people who have insomnia and who are really frequently tossing and turning, having anxiety in their bed, what we really want to do, according to the CBTI protocol, is we want to unpair anxiety from their bed. We want the bed to be a place of sleep or intimacy. And so if you are having those anxious thoughts during the night, one strategy is to get out of bed and to go to another room and do something relaxing and pleasant and dim light until you're sleepy again. So that is just another strategy. It's sort of a little bit more of an advanced strategy. Not everyone's going to want to do that, but it really does help to unpair your bed with the anxiety.
Morgan, I'm going to confess that sometimes I get up in the middle of the night and work for an hour. That's probably not. That doesn't qualify as relaxing or de-stressing. But if I'm up worried about something, I'm like, I might as well be doing the thing I'm worried about. And then I can get back into bed and kind of like, feel like I've achieved. I don't do this all the time. And I try never to do it, honestly, but just, you know, life gets in the way and sometimes we're up. This is probably not sleep school approved, but I'm just throwing it out there for any of the remedial students who need some extra help. Okay. One last question before we start to wrap up and head into our speed round. We talked about screens getting in the way sometimes of sleep, whether or not that's a myth, whether or not we need to really take that seriously. I know that for women who are listening to the show, who are partnered, who are maybe sleeping with somebody, sometimes the sleep problem comes from our partner. Perhaps our partner is snoring or our partner is tossing and turning. How do you recommend women navigate sleep issues with whoever they're sharing their bed with?
Great question. So first and foremost, I would actually look into the health issue, because what often happens in these situations, it's the partner snoring. And this happens so often. So if that is the case, really the first step is to have the partner get a sleep study to figure out, does that partner have sleep apnea? And if so, get it treated, because untreated sleep apnea can lead to, you know, some serious metabolic and cardiovascular consequences. So once that's off the table, and that's dealt with, then sometimes what happens is there are some scheduling differences. Some people have different chronotypes. Some people may be night owls married to an early bird. And I think what really needs to happen is just having a really open, honest discussion during the day, not in the bed, because that is not the time to have heated discussions, and really make a plan. And if necessary, it may be appropriate to have what is called a sleep alliance. That term was actually coined by Dr. Wendy Troxell, who you may have talked to in the past, but that she kind of used that term as a replacement for the word sleep divorce. And, you know, that's a really heated term, but it's used quite often. And basically what that means is when a couple decides to sleep separately, and about 25% of couples do sleep separately because it works best for their own sleep. So I would say just go into this with a very conscious mindset and being kind and considerate, and really looking at it as, how can we address this issue as a partnership versus the blame game?
Yeah, that's such a fabulous reframe, you know, rather than a divorce, which just implies separation and things didn't work. You know, it's like the alliance, we're working together apart.
Yeah.
To make sure everyone gets a good night's sleep. And, you know, I'm sure the alliance also comes with some periods of détente where you all mutually agree to be in the same bed. So that's a great recommendation. And this notion of honest conversations is something that's so key to navigating so many challenges. And I honestly feel as we get to midlife that it's easier to have these honest conversations. Thank you for that great, great suggestion. Sure. All right, Morgan, we are heading into the end of our time together. I'm really excited that we've had this conversation, because I know sleep is such a huge priority for people. We're going to close with a quick speed round so you can pass some more ideas along. Are you ready?
Okay, yeah, sure.
I could talk about the sleep health topic again and again.
Oh, sleep topic. There's so many. Let me pick one. Temperature.
Ooh, we didn't even go there.
Yeah, it's a big one. Temperature of the bedroom and of the bed. Sleeping cool is your friend.
Sleeping cool is your friend.
Whatever you have to do to get there, try to find a way to get there.
Okay, that's a great tip. Okay, what's one action we can take to make sure that our sleep is better tonight besides bringing our temperature down?
I would say go to bed when you are sleepy. So a lot of people will go to bed when they feel mentally tired or physically fatigued. You really want to wait until you're feeling actually sleepy. You're yawning. Your eyes are starting to droop.
Smart. Very smart. Yeah. Okay. Best sleeping position. Is there one, side, back, or doesn't it matter?
It really depends on you, but I think the two best ones are side and back. The side is probably best for brain and gut health. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do stomach, but side or back probably would be the best.
Okay.
Best options.
Nice. All right. Eye mask. Yes or no? I know for me, it's a firm yes, but what do you recommend to clients?
I think it's a yes. If it suits you, if you don't mind something on your face, they actually did a study recently showing that it helped people with cognition and memory the next day.
Ooh.
This is like brand new research.
Ooh, okay.
So that even adds more credibility to an eye mask. To keep the room really dark. We really want the room to be so dark we can't see our hand in front of our face if we hold it up.
Oh my God, you are speaking my language. I am like such an eye mask addict. I've got like a little basket full. I love them so much. And if anybody wants me to be an eye mask influencer, like hit me up. Okay, I think I know the answer to this one. Weekend napping, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh.
If you feel like, yes. Yeah, that's totally fine. So there's a little caveat. You want to make sure that you're not napping for too long. So 20, 30 minutes would be fine, especially if maybe you were out later the night before and you were a little short on sleep. You also want to make sure that any type of nap, no matter what day it is in the earlier part of the day. So I probably would cut off your naps by 3 p.m. because it's napping later in the day is essentially like snacking on sleep. So your sleep appetite for your actual sleep period is cut down. So just be mindful of the timing.
Okay, got it. So you can squeeze in a disco nap before 3. Love it.
Sure. Okay.
So finally, how about this one? This lifestyle choice or hack helps you sleep.
Avoiding alcohol.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
That's
people
a biggie.
Don't want to hear it, but it's so true.
Yeah, yeah. No. We want the right information. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that again and reminding us. Okay, finally, your one-word answer to complete this sentence. As I age, I feel
free.
Free. Nice. I love it. I thought you were going to say sleepy.
No, ma'am.
Oh my gosh. No. I love it. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us during Sleep Awareness Month to help remind us of what we know and need to know and need to practice in order to get an amazing night's sleep, because that keeps the midlife train on the tracks. I so appreciate it. Before we say goodbye, how can our listeners find you, learn more about your sleep advice and sleep school?
Sure. You can find me on my website, morganadamswellness.com. I offer a free mini course on morning and evening routines for better sleep. Also a free sleep clarity call if you want to talk about sleep issues and coaching. I'm also really active on Instagram. My handle is morganadams.wellness. You can find me there. DM me and say hi. I would love to chat with you.
Phenomenal. All of that is going in the show notes. Thank you, Morgan.
Thank you.
Beauties, don't go anywhere. We are doing answers to listener submitted questions. If you are curious about something, if you want more information about a certain topic, hit me up with a question. You can reach me via email at katie@acertainagepod.com, or you can DM me over on Instagram. I hang out on Instagram a lot. You can find me at acertainagepod. Send me your questions via DM. That's how this question came in from a listener. This listener wants to know if I have a favorite supplement. I take a lot of supplements, but my absolute favorite, hands down, is magnesium. Magnesium is great for your bones. It has benefits to your cardiac health. You can even use it for things like PMS, but I use it for sleep. Now, I don't use it every night, and I don't even use it every week. But every time I'm worried that I'm going to be stressed out and too anxious to sleep, I take a magnesium the night before. I take magnesium the night before a really important client call. I take it before I have a podcast with a big name guest. And I always take it when I need to be on stage presenting or public speaking. I truly find it helps conk me out. It lets my head hit the pillow and it lets me get a great night's sleep. Now, I was curious, you know, why does magnesium work so well? I did a little Googling. I have learned that magnesium supplements are often used as a natural remedy for things like insomnia. Magnesium regulates several neurotransmitters involved with sleep. So that's how that magic happens. I also learned that studies have been done that have shown that older adults with insomnia found that magnesium supplements lower the amount of time it takes people to fall asleep by 17 minutes, which is pretty astonishing, right? Wouldn't it be nice to fall asleep 17 minutes faster? And another major study of 4,000 adults found that taking magnesium is linked to improved sleep quality and longer duration. Love that. We all love a great night's sleep. This is why magnesium is my favorite supplement. Thanks for the question. If you have your own, please email me, please DM me. I would love to answer your questions. All right, beauties, this wraps A Certain Age, a show for women who are aging without apology. And before I say goodbye, two quick favors. First, can you please forward this episode to a friend who's having trouble sleeping? Sharing the show helps it grow. You can even dump it into your girlfriend text thread, you know, the one you've got going with all the women in your life. Second, I would love a 5-star podcast review. Did you learn something on today's show? Do you have some easy ideas you are going to start using immediately? If so, please take 5 minutes to write a short review over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Every review helps the show grow. Special thanks to Michael Mancini, who composed and produced our theme music. See you next time. And until then, age boldly, beauties.